Good morning and welcome to the December 5th, 2022 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to thank everyone for participating and remind you to silence any electronic devices, which is a reminder to me to do the same thing. For those of you attending electronically, I would ask that you please mute your screens. Today's meeting is a study and business session, probably with most of it occurring this morning. I believe we'll move fairly rapidly through our agenda today, probably completing everything this morning. We welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are being recorded. Members of the public are encouraged to ask specific questions after each item presented. If you wish to provide additional comment or ask questions related to matters not on the agenda, we will provide some time at the end of the study session this morning for those comments. When recognized, please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. Today, I believe we have, to begin with, we have three commissioners in attendance, Manager Kirk Hudson, General Counsel Eric Wahlquist, and Lisa, who will be acting clerk of the board this morning. So at this time, please join Jacob Morgan in our Pledge of Allegiance and safety minute. Morning, right. Jacob.
Morning. Thank you, Commissioners. I'm Jacob Morgan. I'm the Business Manager for Generation and Transmission, as well as Energy Resources. So I appreciate the time to come here this morning and with the Safety HPI moment. And I thought what I'd do today is share what I thought was a fun case study. I started my career at Boeing for about 11 years, and the 737 production line and our HPI, when I came here, I noticed a lot of similarity there. So I started thinking about how can I draw that story out and compare it to our HPI structure that we're moving into. So,
we're just going to present it so that those online. Sorry, see.
Just trying to get it online for the participants online.
I think you got to go back real quick.
Okay. Under the share. No, to the left. There you go. That one.
Here, let me try.
There we go.
How's that?
Good job.
Thank you. All right. So with the 737 production line and their transition to Lean Plus or the Toyota production system, not sure if you guys have been exposed or not, but I'll just give, we can spend hours here, so I'm going to keep it just to a minute or two. But so the 737 came out in 64, and it didn't really have any competition. It really had a monopoly on the market as a single aisle aircraft until the late 80s when Airbus entered with the A320. And so what was going on there in the good times I've got quoted there on the left is you've got a manufacturing system that took advantage of good times, which meant there wasn't a lot of push for improvement. Obviously, you want to watch your bottom line. You want to watch how you're doing work and look for safety, look all those elements, but you didn't have somebody behind you kind of edging you forward. And so what you saw here in the left was while the high-quality aircraft was coming out, you saw it took 22 days to get an aircraft out of the facility. You move the aircraft to the inventory, used a full third shift just to move aircraft. So 8 hours, hundreds of employees, all you did was move aircraft. There was no value being added to the product. It was really just going to the next spot to get worked on. And so as competition came, it really drove for that, you know, you came into a spot of tough times now. You had competition. You had people pushing you. So you weren't the only one, the only person playing in the playground now. You had to fight for your space. And so there was a vice president, Carolyn Corvey, who came in or was there at the time. And I'm not sure exactly all the dynamics of how it all came through, but she led the 3-7 program in these tough times to bring in this Lean Plus Toyota production system. So they took a trip to Japan, saw how Toyota did the work, and they saw the moving production line that they used to assemble vehicles. And Lean Plus really focuses on continuous improvement processes. It integrates various techniques and tools with that. It provides common language, principles, and training. And it's really focused at going to where the value is being added at the place of work and then making decisions at that place of work. So what you can kind of see here in the photo on the left is, the right, the aircraft is there staging, and then it gets to the right side, and it literally moves through the factory. So it moves, estimated 2 inches per minute, 10 feet per hour. So the aircraft is carrying through. And I've got a video, if you have time at the end of the meeting, you can see it's pretty awesome to watch this all take place. And what happened with theirs, they were able to get from, in 99, they were at 22 days to get an aircraft out the door, 2005, down to 11 days. And then a few years back, 2016, it was 9 days. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but from 22 to 9 days, get an aircraft out the door. Pretty awesome. And so one of the things I really take away as you look at that is, you know, you have losing focus in good times can lead to tough times. But healthy organizations can make their way out. And so it's really about that culture underneath that gets you there. Let's see. So just some of the takeaways. I circled on the right our HPI structure as employees. We are the solution, not the problem. And number 5, excellence is not the absence of failure, but the presence of process and defenses. And I took a few of my takeaways from that case study in parallel to the district. First takeaway is powerful change comes when minds and talents of our team are fully engaged. Anywhere in employee engagement, you hear this term discretionary effort. It's that getting people out of the want-to-do curve, getting people into the want-to-do curve and out of the have-to-do. So I only do what I have to do, but how do we really engage our team fully, get them in there, and bringing them to the place of making decisions about the work, I think really gets us into that curve space. Common language and tools are critical for continuous improvement mindset. We've had a real focus this year on the HPI training, getting to that common language. I think that's really important. That reduces confusion and speeds improvement. Number 3, room to fail, learn, try again is foundation to an innovative culture. And that comes through prototyping or just creating space. And I know that's a renewed mindset here this last year is how do we bring that innovation, how do we bring that space, how do we bring that time for our team to not feel so... Because it has been tough, right? We've been a lot of schedules, a lot of stuff going on, and now it's that kind of how do we find the space in the work to think about things differently and better, and I see that from our leadership, which is great. And then the last one, tap into the people doing the value-added work to drive innovation and make transformational decisions. This is that term in the Lean methodology toward a production system. You'll hear a term called Gemba or Gemba, depending on who you're talking to. But it really means going to the real place where the action is. And so that's just an encouragement to all of us in leadership to work with our teams and go to see where the work's done. I know in my role as a business manager, my favorite days are going to the plant and watching what's happening there and watching what people are doing. It gives me a whole new perspective on how to do my job better to support them. And so it's really key principle in all of this. So that's my HPI minute. Thank you.
Thank you, Jacob. I have to take an educator's opportunity here. So you may or may not know this, but you talked about going to Toyota, Boeing did, to learn about what they were doing with HPI and human performance initiatives, et cetera. Well, interestingly enough, it was an American, Edward Deming. That tried to get that started here. Business didn't accept that. Yep. He went to Japan, got that going, and revolutionized their manufacturing. Right. So,
was it TQM, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, that's always fun to think back on, but those principles of long been studied, and I appreciate the correlation between what we're doing here at the PUD and the story, and very, very good. So thank you very much for being here, Jacob.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jacob.
Okay, commissioners. General Manager Kirk is recommending moving resolutions 10, 11, 12, 14, 15 to the consent agenda. Additionally, for the public's information, items on the consent agenda can come off the agenda and put back onto the regular agenda upon any request of a commission member. So do I hear any recommended changes, commissioners, on our agenda? Okay, hearing none.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Dennis.
Mr. Chairman, and please check and see if I have the right numbers. I move that we move items 10, 11, 12, 14, and 15 to the consent agenda as recommended.
Okay. Any other changes? All right. So we don't need to take a vote on that as long as we all have a head nod on that. So the agenda stands as moved with 11, 12, 14, and 15 going to the consent agenda.
10, 11.
Oh, 12. Sorry, I lost 10. Yep. Thank you very much for that correction. Okay. All right. Before I move on to our presentations for the morning, I'd like to take this opportunity, and I don't know if we have extra copies of this in the room, but you'll see Ann and Dennis on this flyer, and I just want to take this opportunity to invite all of you to join us to celebrate nearly 20 years of their work on this commission for this PUD. To celebrate their work and accomplishments. And we'll be doing that December 19th, an hour before our next board meeting down in Gerald's. And we would just like to celebrate their work almost a decade. Dennis, can you believe that? And Ann, along a lot of time and effort has gone into their work. And we just want to say thank you to you and provide an opportunity for the public to come and join us an hour before the meeting, our next board meeting down at Gerald's at 9 a.m. to say thanks to Dennis and Ann. So please join us. All right. So, Kirk, at this time, let's go ahead and move into item number three, pre-legislative update.
Yeah, I'd like to invite Kelly Scott up. Kelly's going to provide us with some of the things that we're going to be focused on in the next legislative session, and Dave Arbaugh is actually online as well, and he may speak to some of this as well. So, Kelly, welcome.
Thank you. Am I using the clicker here? Okay. Good morning. Commissioners, good morning.
You might want to move the microphone close to you there. There you go.
Is that better?
Yep, yes. Thank you.
My name is Kelly Scott. I am the Government Affairs Program Manager here. I've been in the role since April. I might be better known around here as the new Sean Seaman, although those are clearly pretty big shoes to fill. A couple of quick notes to get us started today. Dave Arbaugh is on the line to provide additional context or background information or kind of nudge me back to reality if I wander off too far. The idea today is just to give you all a very broad overview of what we're going to keep our eyes on heading into the 2023 legislative session. But as we run through these issues very quickly, please just let me know if you'd like to follow up and dig deeper into any of these issues. I also know that through your engagement with WAPUDA and other organizations, a lot of this will not be news to you today. And so let's go ahead and dive in. Okay. Can we go back?
I think you right click when you go back. Then go back. Previous.
Yep, it's a little bit.
There you go.
All right. So today we're going to cover the results of the 2022 election, an overview of what to expect during the 2023 session, a few issues we will be tracking closely, what WAPUTA is focused on, other policies we're keeping on our radar, and then we'll end by touching on an issue of federal funding that is flowing through the state. A final disclaimer, a lot of this will likely shift in the coming weeks when we learn the governor's budget, what's going to be introduced. We don't know a lot of committee assignments yet, so a lot of this will look different next time we talk. All right, so what happened in 2022? Locally, nothing has changed. Both Representative Keith Gaynor and Representative Mike Steele won re-election, and Senator Hawkins was not on the ballot. He'll be up again in 2024. And not much changed statewide either. Democrats will again have strong majorities in both chambers with a 29-20 majority in the Senate and a 58-40 majority in the House. Representative Lori Jenkins from Tacoma will continue to serve as Speaker in the House, and Senator Andy Billig of Spokane will remain the majority leader in the Senate. Representative Joe Fitzgibbon, who had been the chair of the House Energy Committee, was elected House Majority Leader, which means we're going to have a new committee chair on energy in the House, and we're waiting to hear who that is in the next couple days. We'll also have a new energy chair over in the Senate, and that was announced. It will be Senator Joe Nguyen. We're going to know more about the Republican leadership and committee appointments within a couple days. This was one that I think Sean went over with you last year after the redistricting process, but this is what the new 12th district looks like. You'll see that we now take in the eastern portions of both King and Snohomish counties, as well as all of Chelan and a very small sliver of East Wenatchee. Of note here is that our legislators in the 12th will now represent Chelan and Douglas PUDs, but also Puget Sound Energy and Snohomish PUD ratepayers. All right, so we are heading into the every other year long session, 105 days. It begins on January 9th and will conclude, or it's scheduled to conclude, on April 23rd. The session will be back in person mostly, but many hearings and committee meetings will have a hybrid option, which could be a good thing for those of us over on this side of the mountains. It is a budget year, and as you know, Washington enacts our budgets on a two-year cycle. The governor will release his budget proposal in the next few days, and the legislature will come back in 2023 with their own. Now, as the governor and lawmakers are coming up with their budget proposals, we think they'll keep a couple things in mind. Number one is the fact that our state's revenue projections for the next 2 years are incredibly healthy. The state's now projected to bring in about $681 million more than anticipated for the coming biennium, for a total of $66.2 billion in revenue to work with. And that's up a couple billion dollars from the last time they wrote a budget. However, the rosy revenue picture will be tempered by the economic uncertainty of the moment, with inflation and high interest rates, the housing market cooling off so quickly. And so while revenue is up now, nobody expects that will stay the case for too long. Democratic lawmakers have indicated that their priorities will be education spending, mental health services, and housing and homelessness. And homelessness and housing is also something that the governor has says will be his main priority this year as well. One thing to note is that the government affairs teams from Chelan, Douglas, and Grant PUDs have been meeting regularly for the past 6 months or so. And we're really trying to find ways to collaborate, and where there are places where we can support each other and our policy priorities, we're going to be doing that. We will be in very frequent communication during session, and there are new faces in all the roles at those three PUDs, and so it's been nice to get to know each other and work collaboratively. We'll continue. Here are the issues that we as a PUD are keeping an eye on. The first one, you know, I think our engagement is going to look different for each of these, whether we're going to sign in and testify or write a letter or we just kind of keep an eye on it. This first one, wildfire mitigation, however, is going to be a big one for us. Obviously, as so much of our infrastructure is located in wildfire risk at-risk areas, we take the threat very seriously here. You may recall last session, Senator Rolfes introduced legislation that, as first introduced, set really strict liability standards, which prompted a very high level of concern within the industry. WAPUTA reached out quickly. we engaged with her as well, and it was a good faith conversation and dialogue, and she took the input, and in the end, her bill would have simply required utilities to create and submit wildfire mitigation plans based on best practices. And I really cannot overstate how much of a fundamental shift this was from where it started with a focus on liability to a focus on planning and prevention. In the end, we really like the bill. We think we're already doing a lot of what it would have mandated. It's the right thing to do. And so we supported it, and we'll continue to support it. We think it's important to engage in this conversation now and have a seat at the table. So we're going to continue to do that. We hear it's going to be coming back again next year. It didn't make it through the House last year. It sounds like Representative Dent has signed on to carry it in the House. And of course, Rolfes will lead again in the Senate. So, okay, transmission is going to be something you'll hear about likely this session from me and Tracy and others quite a bit. The state has not historically played a large role in transmission, but after passing these massive decarbonization bills in recent years, policymakers are now thinking through how are we going to get all of this renewable energy that we've mandated to the places it needs to go. And so they're turning their attention to transmission. They want to get more of it sited and constructed, and they want to do that quickly. So we're going to keep this on our radar. The governor has floated legislative language that, among other things, would study a larger role for the state to build and finance its own transmission lines, which would be a real departure. And so as a PUD, what we're doing is just sort of taking stock internally, thinking through what this might mean for us. We don't own a significant amount of transmission. We're not planning to build a large amount of transmission, but you know, there's a possibility that getting more transmission built could help us get our power to market. Of course, anytime the state says they want to take a larger role in our industry, our ears perk up a little bit, and we're going to obviously be scrutinizing that pretty intently. For habitat protection standards, that really means net ecological gain, which is something that I think you guys have been hearing about for several years. It was an idea that originally came out of the ORCA task force several years ago, and Representative Lakhanov has been bringing it back in recent years. Last year, the state kicked the can a bit when they came up with the study of the habitat protection standard. We think it's going to come back. It would essentially require public entities to fund salmon restoration when developing projects, even if those projects have no nexus to salmon degradation. This goes for libraries building on wings or utilities building substations. So we're keeping an eye on that. This recreational use protection, speaking of our Mid-Sea collaboration, this one came from our friends at Grant. It would clarify existing liability protections for hydro projects, and we are supportive of that. Grant faced litigation a few years ago when someone was out boating and recreating on the river, injured themselves quite seriously, said they thought the water was higher than it was, that the water level had gone down, and the reason the water level was down was because the PUD was operating within their FERC license, right? And so this current state law provides certain liability protections for hydro projects to encourage public recreational use. And you might recall back in about 2011 was when Senator Parlett was able to get the state law changed to exempt hydro operators from liability from injuries that occur when someone's kayaking. Now, this bill would further clarify that liability protections associated with recreation, as long as the hydro project is operating under a FERC license, they should include the variation of water levels. Broadband funding. As you all know, Chelan's fiber optic infrastructure has been built out to reach about 79% of our customers, and our goal remains to reach 85 to 90% of the county. And so, you know, right now as the state's coming up with rules and criteria for some of these big broadband infrastructure funding programs, we're keeping up with those conversations. It sounds like the director of the state broadband office, Visconi, last week indicated that they may be looking at a bill to tweak some of their funding processes. So we'll be keeping an eye on that. Okay, so I'm really not going to get into a lot of these. I know Gary in particular is very aware of what WPUDA is working on, and you guys are fresh off the conference, but I just wanted to really quickly mention that in my few months here at the PUD, it's been really a joy to work with WAPUTA. They've been a great resource, and any way that we can support them, even, you know, there are some priorities that they have that aren't massively important to us here, but if we can find a way to support them, we will. The one thing on this list I would point you to is grid reliability, because that is such a big topic and it's such a source of frustration within the WAPUTA group. The background here is that last session, Governor Inslee vetoed a bill from Representative Gina Mossbrucker that would have really looked at the state's power grid and the ways that recent climate policies place more demand on it. The bill had passed unanimously out of both chambers, but the governor vetoed it, said it was redundant, said this work is already being done elsewhere. You know, I think there were a lot of hard feelings over that. In fact, just last week, WAPUTA honored Representative Mossbrucker with their Champion of the Year, and so I think they really want to see this one come back. Okay. Again, very long list of issues that we don't need to go through all of them. Just to say that there were these major climate policies passed in recent years that now we're now watching for implementation. They take effect next year. We're not hearing that there's any appetite to open these up for legislative fixes, but we're just monitoring at this point. And of course, organizations like PGP have really taken a lead role on the Climate Commitment Act and CETA implementation. Let's see. Oh, I put the electrical vehicle and DER on there because a couple weeks ago, the Joint Committee on Energy Supply and Energy Conservation proactively reached out to Chelan PUD to ask us about, or, you know, to ask us to present on these issues. Apparently, committee staff had seen a Power Hour video online featuring Jim White, and they invited him to present. And so Jim, along with Sean Smith, delivered a presentation to the Joint Committee last week, and they did a great job. Basically, they told the committee that Chelan PUD is thoughtfully approaching these issues. They listed some of the ways we see distributed energy resources in the county working. There were some questions from lawmakers about our ability to support a large number of EVs. And the answer from Jim and Sean was that, yes, we're developing our plans and making sure cars are charged at the proper time and confident that our system will be fine. And it sounds like Dave Arbaugh, our man in Olympia, I think he's on the line, has heard positive feedback from committee members since then that really got a lot out of that presentation. Let's see. The Attorney General, let's see, he has proposed language that would prohibit utilities from shutting off power or water if the temperature is forecasted to be 95 degrees or higher. It sounds like Senator Joe Wynn has agreed to sponsor in the Senate. And as you recall, he is our new energy chair. So it's one to watch. We don't know how seriously this will be taken, how far it will go, but we're going to keep our eyes on it. Labor and Industries is working on new rules dealing with worker safety and exposure to extreme heat. This one came out of the agricultural community, and it's directed at the ag industry, but WAPUTA is engaging on that one. We're watching it closely. You know, the rest of this list are all things that Sean had on his watch list last year, and we're keeping them on there because they're not going to go away anytime soon. If you have specific questions, I've got Dave here. I think he would be helpful. And Dave, did you also want to maybe mention or get on their radar the possibility of net metering? Are you able to unmute?
Yeah, sure. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. I just, thanks, Kelly. I just wanted to pass along I don't know if I'd call it a rumor, but an indication from the solar industry, the installers are talking about maybe introducing a proposal that would modify net metering rules. This is something that we have worked on off and on again for many, many years. And we don't have any specifics around it yet, but it's something that if it is introduced, it's a complicated issue and it'll take some time to sift through. So you'll likely hear more about that in the coming weeks.
And Dave, for our audience online and here in the room that may not have heard that term before, can you just ballpark to 50,000 foot level, what does net metering mean?
Net metering has to do with if a maybe a person has a solar installation on their house and they sell the power that they're not using to the utility, how that transaction works.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. Okay, finally, just to run through, just I think you're already aware of this, and Tracy and Suzanne will be able to give you a fuller picture, but just to remind everybody that so much of the grant funding that's flowing through the state right now is coming and originating from the federal government, from the COVID relief and the infrastructure packages passed in recent years, and those come with some added regulatory obligations, and so the external affairs team has created a process of really digging in and analyzing each of those funding programs to make sure that there aren't things in there that would really be a barrier for us to apply, make it too financially onerous down the road. And then that's it. Questions? Or Dave, I don't know if you have anything else to add or correct.
We have any questions? Any questions from anybody in the audience or online? All right.
All right.
Kelly, thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Can I make a comment?
Yes, please, Dennis.
I would like to bid Dave Arbaugh a professional farewell. My next to last meeting, many of you may not know, our relationship goes back probably close to 30 years when he represented a union that was in the school business, and I was a representative for the Principals Association. We used to sit on the opposite side of the table. And then and now, Dave, I'd just like to say, you know, thank you for your hard work, your honesty, your integrity. And regardless of who you represented, you've always done it well and done it with a clear, with a very good conscience and the consummate professional. And just want to say my appreciation for you over the years.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. I appreciate the kind words, and I wish you the very best.
Thank you.
All right. Kelly, it's great having you at the table here, and we will be seeing more of you both at WAPUTA and here in the future. And so welcome. And
thank you. Look forward to it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kelly.
All right. Agenda item number 4, Upper Valley Transmission Outreach Results.
Yep, we've got Rachel Hansen and Steve Wickel here to present the latest results of the outreach we recently did on the Upper Valley transmission options.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Rachel, and this is Steve Wickel from Transmission. So why we're here today, we're going to show everything we've done to get the word out about this project and invite public comment. We'll share with you the feedback that we received, and we'll review some of the plans that we evaluated, and we'll talk about next steps. So on the screen, you'll see a mailer, a postcard mailer that we sent to about 3,000 households in the Upper Valley, and that was in late October. You'll notice that it invites the public to two different drop-in sessions, one in Leavenworth, one in Plain. It also directs them to a website where they can get details about the project and an email address if they have any questions. We mailed an electronic version via email to about 2,500 customers, and we saw through analytics that that email received about a 50% open rate, which is better than the national average of 34% open rate. That website summarized the plans, including the newest proposal, Alternative 3. And according to, I wanted to point out some of the features here. It invited people to sign up for email updates. It invited them out to the drop-in sessions. And it also provided a place where people can submit their comments and questions. So according to Google Analytics, about 54 people visited this site total. We didn't receive any comments, nor did anyone sign up for email updates. So moving on to the November 4th drop-in session at Leavenworth, We had three people attend, including Keith Gaynor and two customer owners. One of the customer owners, his name was Tom McDevitt, he was concerned about the aesthetics of that shiny steel galvanized pole. And we were happy to tell him that that was not in the plans, that the materials we plan to use are similar to what we used in Chelan. That photo on the left shows that brown patina. So his concern was taken care of. There's also Jordan McDevitt, his son, came. They're both property owners that are involved in the Bavarian substation planning effort. So we were able to show him the maps and show which transmission lines were relevant to this project, the Beverly McKenzie line. Keith Gaynor had a question about whether the access roads to perform the work, how that was going to work with the Forest Service, if we'd be able to keep those access roads. So we talked with him a bit about that. November 10th, over a few hours, we saw one person, and his name was Graham Watson. We gave him some basic talking points about the project, and he said that you know, based on his knowledge of the Lake Wenatchee community, he's a longtime community member, if people had concerns about this project, that they would have shown up. So he was, he said that we should just do what we need to do, and we have his support. So in summary, we believe we've done our due diligence with inviting public comment about this project, and at this time, we do not recommend any further outreach at this point. So Steve Wickel, would you like to review the plans that we evaluated?
Certainly. Good morning, commissioners. Good morning, Kirk. Steve Wickel in transmission. So alternative one, so both alternative one and alternative two were proposed in 2019. Alternative one was the new alignment. So it's kind of the gray highlighted section off to the right. It starts at the bottom of the page up to where the gray starts. That's in both alternatives one and two. But this alternative one had a new alignment that was going to be better for access, defending of fires, et cetera, if they actually come through. Then steel construction for the entire route, so all the way from the bottom clear up to the top with steel construction. That's the best for fire resiliency. We had looped power, so that's the highest reliability of all configurations. And the estimated cost was $40 to $60 million for that. This was the district preferred option, because of the resiliency and the reliability. Customer feedback, however, was they had concerns about private property values, aesthetics, and cost. Alternative two remained in the same alignment. So rather than the gray, it splits off and goes off to the left. That's the current alignment right now. Where it splits off from the gray and goes to the left, that's through Sunage and Dead Horse Canyons. Very difficult to access, and that was one of our biggest concerns and why we proposed the reroute. Steel construction for the entire route, so high fire resiliency, and there was going to be some improvements at Cole's Corner for substation improvements that would increase reliability then to Plain and Lake Wenatchee and Cole's customers. Estimated cost for that was also $40 to $60 million, and the customer feedback was concerns about cost.
Steve, concerned about cost in that. Can you go back one slide?
Yes.
Help me understand that, given the cost difference between those two were the same. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So just overall.
Overall cost, yeah. Overall so cost. Still okay. The fact that a lot of them stated that, you know, they felt reliability was already pretty good. There was a lot of improvements on the distribution system, which is the highest cause of outages is really on the distribution system, not on the transmission system. So given that high price tag for the limited increase in reliability there, they just...
Thank you.
Yeah, that was the feedback. So that led us to go back to the drawing board, and we came up with alternative three, which is really kind of a hybrid of alternative two. So we remain in the same alignment. However, we reconductor from Anderson Canyon to where it crosses the Chumsik. So that's the bottom section and kind of the purple arrows. That will change the conductor used, increase the capacity on the conductor used, but we're going to hope to use as many of the existing wood poles as we can. There will be poles that have to be replaced, and those that we do replace will be replaced in steel. Then the second piece is just to rebuild, a complete rebuild in steel. Those are kind of the red arrows there from where it crosses the Chumstick up through Sunich Dead Horse and all the way to Cole's Corner. So that'll be a complete rebuild in steel. And then there's a section in green at the top. It's kind of hard to see, but there's two green arrows. That's the plain tap, and that goes up over the Natapoc. And we're going to, that was the highest fire danger in our 2017 HDR report. And that will, we will rebuild in steel as well. Let's see. I should have brought my glasses with me. I'm struggling as I get older here. I think we're good, though. Eric? Thank you.
Now I can't see it.
But. Now you can't see. There you go. I think that was it. So this, based on the public feedback, was the preferred option or alternative with the public. There is always the do-nothing option where we continue doing our existing maintenance. It does not address the fire resiliency, the capacity, or reliability improvements. So based on the public outreach and efforts, we recommend moving forward with alternative three. For next steps, board action here, request approval of alternative three, so that'll be on the next slide. We anticipate design and permitting in 2023 and maybe into 2024. We have an existing McKenzie-Beverly permit with the U.S. Forest Service that we're hopeful covers this work, but we need to look into that further. And then construction, we initially thought perhaps 2 years of construction, but given the uncertainty with the permitting, we don't know what will happen with the design until we finish it next year, perhaps dedicating 1 year to the switching improvements at Cole's Corner. We think 2024 to 2027, just for an anticipated construction. So, with that, are there any questions? We do propose moving forward with the motion to approve and construct alternative three.
At this time, do we have any commissioners or audience questions for Steve and Rachel?
Right. A big part of the reliability.
You might want to repeat the question for those behind.
The question is, what do we? What reliability improvements do we get from this? And a big part of it is some of the switching improvements at Cole's Corner. So right now, if a tree goes into the line anywhere from clear down at the bottom of that map at Anderson Canyon, anywhere on the Lake Wenatchee tap, the Plain tap, you lose all of those substations. You lose Cole's Corner, Plain, and Lake Wenatchee until you find where the fault is, clear the tree, or whatever the case may be, fix the pole. You lose that those customers. So the switching improvements will be big. And then building in steel. So our biggest concern is through Sunich and Dead Horse. If a big fire rolls through there, it could take months to get back in there, depending on circumstances. So rebuilding in steel will at least help the pole stay up. There may be a little bit of maintenance to do in between, depending upon how soiled the conductors and insulators and things get. But it should withstand the fire, at least, for a quicker restoration.
Yeah, I would also say that, you know, these are extreme events we're talking about. And, you know, what we're trying to do is mitigate the days, if not weeks, if not months, in certain scenarios that we could have a large number of people that are out of power. Yeah. Well, you want to introduce yourself, Paul? Just come up to the for the people online. Just.
Sure. Yeah. Paul Schmidt, and we live in Wenatchee out on Miller Street. I wanted to say a few things. Is this a good time to wait until...
Maybe wait until public comment, no problem. Unless you want to address this particular project.
No.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you. Dennis, did you have something that you wanted to share or a question?
Just a question. Could you illustrate, please, for us the... improved safety enhancement by reconfiguring this line.
Improved safety side of it.
For the alternative three?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yes, please.
Yeah. So, in safety, I mean, right now the transmission line is wood and it's older. A big part of the safety improvements will just be the steel construction and, you know, the cross arms will be in steel, the existing wood. So when we have a tree fall into the line, you know, the wood cross arms that are there right now are more prone to breaking. And we're anticipating fewer outages, fewer issues, which puts our people less in danger as they go up and respond to these.
Thank you. I think that's significant.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion that we move to consider the public outreach, considering the public outreach and input received, that we direct staff to move forward with design and implementation of Alternative 3 for the Plain and Lake Wenatchee Resiliency Project.
Second.
Any comments or discussion? Okay, commissioners, let's take a vote. All those in favor of Alternative 3, the motion, please signify by saying aye.
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 And I will say aye. Those against, signify by saying aye. Motion passes. So, staff, you have that commitment from us and marching orders. And I just want to take this opportunity. Again, I think this was a great example of going out to the community, listening, learning, finding out where the concerns are, and really listening and adjusting accordingly and coming back with alternative plans. And says a lot about the work that our staff have done in order to listen to our customer owners. So thank you for all that work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to thank the team, and Chad Bowman's here too, who's spent a lot of time on this, but this has been 20 years that our team has been working on alternatives to try and make some of these upgrades and improvements up there. And so it is a key milestone in having a path forward. So thank you all.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation.
Everyone.
Okay, at this time we'll move on to item number 5, Identity Theft Presentation Program Update.
Eric Walquist. Yeah, thank you, commissioners. So Eric Walquist, general counsel. This is that singular time each year that we come before the board and provide an update and on any identity theft issues that we've been challenged with. You might recall that this grows out of the Identity Theft Prevention Program, which was actually initially required in 2008. The board did adopt such a program, and one of the requirements is that we come each year and report to the board as to whether or not we've had or experienced any failures. And happy to report this year that we have not. So I guess with that, if there aren't any questions, I will turn it back to you and Kirk, and we'll keep plugging along.
Commissioners, any questions for Eric? It's good news. Thank you, Eric. Just looking at my screen to make sure I'm not missing anyone. All right. Thank you. This time, I'm going to open this up for public comment on things that are not on our agenda before we move into our business session. So do we have anybody from the public that would like to address the board? Please state, come on up, state your name, address, and thank you for being here.
Yeah, Paul Schmidt, and we're on Miller Avenue in Wenatchee. And I just wanted to say thanks to Ann and Dennis for all their service for all these years, and especially to Dennis for shaping and forming my wife, because she was one of his students. And she said that Dennis was her favorite teacher.
Oh, wow.
So that was pretty special. And I hadn't met Dennis, but we all got stuck in Seattle one day, and we pooled a car together, and I rode with him over, and I met him, and I put him on the phone with my wife, because he remembered her. So it was a neat story. So
that's great.
Thanks, Dennis. We appreciate it. The other thing I wanted to say is, you know, what a great asset the PUD is for this community. I mean, from day one when I first got here, you know, my wife grew up here, but I was from Ohio. I've just seen you know, what a well-run organization it is and all that it does and helps with the community. So I want to say thanks to you and the entire PUD team for everything they do. And, you know, I was interfacing with Localtel this morning, hence the dress, because we were putting in a new service at one of our rentals for fiber. So, you know, your people, any of your people I've dealt with have been very, very good and very helpful. So I just want to say I appreciate that. You know, I showed up a lot during the Bitcoin thing when you guys were looking at that, and I appreciate what you've done there. I think you've done an excellent job with that. So the one question I had, and we touched on it briefly, and are you going to talk about the Microsoft thing still today?
Hadn't planned on it today.
Okay.
Feel free to provide your input, though.
Yeah. So what I wanted to say was that a friend of mine had said that a PUD employee at one of the dams had made a comment that because Microsoft is going in, that we should expect, you know, potentially rolling brown and blackouts. I said, I certainly don't think it's true because you guys are a lot smarter than that. But that was just a question I had, how that plays out. And my understanding is you're not even guaranteeing them power. You may supply it, you may not supply it, depending on what is our collective best interests. And so I just wanted to get a little input so that if I hear something like that, I'm in a position to say that's certainly not true and have it right from the source. That's what I've got.
Thank you for your question.
Thank you. Oh, and I did tour your building the other day. It's going to be very, very nice. And so certainly an upgrade here. So I had one quick question, though. You said at the little celebration for Dennis and Ann, where's that going to be? Is that here somewhere?
Yeah, down there's a lunchroom downstairs on the ground floor in the back.
Okay.
And it's
drive around the back.
Yep, around the back.
Okay, so can you get him from the front door? You got to go in from the back.
Yeah, if you go around to the back, there, you'll see there's a little covered patio, and that door is always open to the public.
Okay. Yep. Okay, thanks. I just wanted to make sure I showed up at the right place.
If you show up and you're not, someone will get you there.
Okay.
Hey, Paul, can you sit down in that other chair? I think Commissioner Bowles wants to.
Okay. Yeah. Hi, Dennis.
Just a moment, Paul. Good to see you, and please say hello to Nancy. And in all humility, Nancy made me a good teacher. So please pass that along to her. She was a great student to work with, and appreciate your support over the years and the number of conversations we've had, and your patience with allowing me to explain things and our wisdom and your probing. You've made us a better commission and a better organization by your activity. And much appreciated. Thank you.
Well, thank you and good luck on your retirement. I'm planning on trying to get there on the 19th, so hopefully we can, if you're going to be there, we'll be able to say hello in person.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks, Paul. Do we have any other questions or comments from the public? Anything on my screen? Seeing none, I'll keep moving on through the agenda. So we're going to move into our business session at this time. Commissioners, we have a consent agenda which includes items number 10, 11, 12, 14, and 15 that have been added. Do I hear a motion for our consent agenda?
Mr. Chairman, I would propose a motion that we accept the consent agenda as described.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. All right. At this time, we will move into our regular agenda on resolution number 9. We have had two public hearings on our proposed 2023 budget for our fiber network, wastewater, and integrated electric. And at this time, Dave is back in front of us. And go ahead, Dave.
Thank you, Commissioner McKenna. Hi, I'm Dave Nelson, the Manager of Strategic Financial Planning, and I am here today with a resolution seeking the board's approval of the 2023 budget. As mentioned, we've had several public meetings, an introductory meeting in October, and two public hearing meetings in November, as required by our policies, and have presented the budget in the detail. I would note that the proposed 2023 budget is built on the strategic, the district's strategic plan, strategic initiatives, and our five-year business plans. Our budget that was presented and five-year plan that was presented on the 17th of November presented a five-year plan in compliance with the district's financial policy metrics. And the details of the 2023 budget are attached to the resolution. I would just note that we are forecasting a bottom line of $103 million in 2023. We have an overall budget of expenditures of $496 million proposed, including $37 million in debt reduction, $183 million of net capital, as well as our O&M budget. So that is the high-level summary. There's also a full listing of capital projects attached to the presentation you have today, or the resolution you have today. And so we are seeking approval of that budget. We have a significant amount of work, as you know, in this budget. It's a significant budget with continuation of our modernization plans at Rock Island as a big driver of our capital plans. Continuation of our repairs, turbine repairs at Rocky Reach, a big driver of our O&M expenses, as well as a capital program, including completion of our operations and service center. So there's a lot of work in there and a lot of challenges ahead for 2023. I'd like to just request approval of the budget as presented. One additional note is we have not received any additional public comment or questions regarding the budget. And we have not made any changes to the budget that was presented on November 21st. So those are the same numbers and information that were presented to you then.
Great. Answered my two questions. Okay. Commissioners, do I have a motion for our budget for resolution number 9?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept resolution number 9 as presented.
I'll second the motion.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion for our budget for 2023, resolution number 9, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Resolution passes. All right. Kirk, we are on to resolution number 13.
Okay, thanks, Dave. Resolution 13, I'd invite George Velasquez up. A resolution declaring Hitachi Energy USA Incorporated of Raleigh, North Carolina as the sole source supplier for the materials, equipment, and technical services necessary to the generator circuit breaker rebuild and repair for Rocky Reach, and authorizing the general manager to enter into a contract with Hitachi Energy USA Incorporated. Contract number 22-12563. George?
Good morning. Due to Hitachi being the only sole source provider for some of these generator breaker parts, the Rocky Reach project team is requesting authorization to contract with Hitachi to provide all of the equipment necessary to refurbish the generator breakers. Generator breakers for all the units at Rocky Reach need refurbishment. They've been in operation for 15 to 20 years, and that's typically the lifespan for all the wear parts on these generators. In the past, plant wiremen have completed the refurbishment, but they've also received technical assistance from ABB's technical division. So we're planning on utilizing the same approach. ABB Power Grids division was acquired by Hitachi in 2020, so we'll be contracting with Hitachi directly. In order to maintain the district's critical assets and prevent unplanned downtime, the generator breakers for all the 11 units at Rocky Reach need to be refurbished. The best price quote from Hitachi was received. We received an affidavit letter. The unit generator breaker replacement will be completed in conjunction with already existing planned outages to minimize downtime on our units. With that, I'll entertain any questions you may have.
Okay. Do we have any questions for George, commissioners, or the audience?
Thank you.
Thanks, George. Dave, and I didn't say thank you, Dave, earlier for your presentation on the budget, so thank you, too. Commissioners, do I have a motion for resolution number 13?
Mr. Chairman, I move approval of resolution 13.
Second.
Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of resolution number 13 signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Okay, we are now on to item number 16, and we're talking about the district's participation in the Western Power Pool Adequacy Program. And Sean is with us today. Anything else?
Nope.
Want to say that?
Good morning, commissioners. Sean Smith here, Managing Director of Energy Resources. I have control of this, right?
Yep.
So today we're going to, one up, is that right? There we go. We're going to review resource adequacy overall, and then the Western Resource Adequacy Program in detail. We're going to go over SHLAN joining RAP's pros and cons, both on a local level and a regional level. Going to go through the timeline, and then we are asking to vote on a resolution to participate in the Western Resource Adequacy Program. So previously, we've been here a number of times over the last 3 years. We've been to various board updates. Also, within the energy resources updates, we've updated you when we come quarterly. And then recently, a couple weeks ago, we came with a manager's item. The problem statement here is, while the Pacific Northwest has enjoyed decades of surplus within the region, little issues of reliability have started to surface throughout the region. This is at the backdrop where there will be increased amounts of intermittent renewables and also large loads, as we've seen from Microsoft locating here and the other PUDs within the district. My staff has been involved for the last 3 years to ensure it correctly values hydro resources and capacity hydro that it provides. The staff believes this program design is sound and hydro gets excellent treatment within this program. Additionally, the district has been given this opportunity to benefit because a Westwide RA program provides a robust compliance standard, which will increase the demand for our clean, flexible, and reliable hydropower, providing an important revenue stream for our customers to keep their rates low for decades to come. So what is resource adequacy? Well, it's the ability for the electric power system to serve load across a broad range of operating conditions. And it's subject to a long-run standard, so we have maximum reliability throughout the region and especially within the district. We operate in a connected grid, and it should be noted what this program does is provide a clean, uniform standard with accountability and commitment from each participant within the district. It establishes how much capacity each member gets and each of our resources get. It creates transparency across the network and across all the region. And it creates a potential for cost and resource savings through pooling of resources as times change in the coming decades. RAP provides a platform to call on capacity when we are deficit. Even though we do have excess, there are times of the year when we do have issues of capacity. These are some of the participants that have participated over the last 3 years. You'll see it covers almost the entire Western U.S., except for California, obviously, because they have their own resource adequacy program. We are talking 65,000 megawatts of peak winter load and 66,000 of peak summer load. Participation is voluntary within this program, but once you join, the requirements are binding. This will be implemented through a bilateral program, so that framework is already existing. So what RAP does is it implements a binding forward showing 7 months prior to each season. It requires us to demonstrate we have enough capacity to meet our load plus a planning reserve margin. It implements this binding program and obligates its members to participate, and bases this on certain capacity critical hours. So it looks across the whole program and makes sure those moments, those hours when capacity is at its greatest need, we are covered as a region. This leverages the binding nature of an operational program, and we model those supply and load diversity across the region. This drives savings for members and end-use customers as well. Now, as I look at the district's pros and cons, what we're really talking about here is increasing value of our resources. This establishes the value of resource adequacy within our program and within the whole region. It's been a little nebulous what exactly resource adequacy value is, and what this does is actually add value for our customers, keeping rates low for decades to come. It's critical that our value is understood and people know that regardless of what they see in the future, having a specific value for resource adequacy adds tremendous value for the district, which passes through to our customers. Also, this maintains the voluntary program helps us because if we do not pass this, there could be the state government mandate us to start to be part of the resource adequacy program. We've been there through all these rules through the last 3 years and crafted a very good program, especially for hydro. By not passing this today, we could face an uncertain future on resource adequacy where we haven't had any input to the rules. Joining also would provide us less planning reserve margin and allow us to continue selling more slice sales. There's regional pros as well for the district. Allows us to have a diversity and reliability across the region. Also, as markets develop, we've talked about there's two day-ahead markets. One of those markets is looking at RAP as a potential area to fashion their resource adequacy program after. With cons, we're looking at a little additional work and then a little less influence on program rules compared to our own standalone program. However, if we do our own standalone program, we'll have to withhold
many more resources in the future. This is a little transition timeline. We're asking today to join the program. The program doesn't start till at least 2025. There's a window between 2025 and 2028 where it's called the transition period, but it gives us quite a runway to evaluate this program. It should be noted, we also have a two-year window where we can exit the program at any time with a two-year notice. So that's important from what I've heard. So I wanted to answer any questions from the board, and we're requesting board approval today. I should note, you know, I put that in there. We're committing to join the program right now. It goes binding between 25 and 28. If at any point it looks like our analysis does not match up with what we've looked at before, we can always come back and give a two-year notice.
Thank you, Sean. Commissioners, questions, comments, or questions from the audience? Ann.
Thank you. So, first of all, thank you, Kirk, Eric, and Sean, for taking time out of your weekend to try to help educate me on this. I just didn't feel qualified. I didn't have enough knowledge about it to even vote today. So, you guys spent a lot of time with me. And I know more about it now than I did coming in. I know quite a bit more, but I don't pretend to ever have the expertise to understand it like our experts do. I do know it's complicated and dynamic and far-reaching, this issue. And so all the, you know, the ramifications I do not understand, although I know more than I did. So I am going to support it. I think there is more upside than downside, according to what I've learned. And we have off-ramps, which Sean mentioned. So with that, I'm going to have to trust the experts and vote to support this.
Thank you, Commissioner. Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Ann. Gary?
Thank you, Steve. I've also tried really hard to understand how all of this works and had a conversation as well with Kirk over the weekend to really wrap my head around it, no pun intended. And it is an extremely complex program, one that holds the potential for terrific reward, I think, in the future. And what I finally came to a conclusion of my discomfort was that I didn't understand it, and I had to just kind of come to the agreement that in my mind I'm not going to understand it because it is so complex. And so at the end of the day, trusting our staff, and I mean, you've heard me say this a million times, I just get to come to work and play in your sandbox, and you guys do a great job. So I'm also a supporter of the RAP program going forward, and appreciate the exit ramp, the two-year exit ramp, should the need arise. But I'm looking forward to seeing how this all comes together and maybe understanding it a little bit more in the future. So I'm a supporter.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Chairman McKenna?
Yes, sir.
Sean, I think probably best is the price established market-based. Or is that dictated?
What was the question?
The price.
Is the price.
Is it a market price?
The market price?
Is it a market price?
Yeah.
Is it a market price? So is your question on the penalties or on the... So are you saying...
Correct me if I'm wrong, Commissioner Bowles. Is it the capacity, if it's used in the RAP, how that price gets established?
Yeah, how do we get it? What establishes the monetary response to our capacity?
there's two items there. One is if it got called upon, you would get the regular mid-C price plus an adder. So you get so when it's called upon on the day of the program, you actually get a little adder above the mid-C price. Prior to the seven-month period, that is still the negotiable part, where if another utility looks to us and knows we're long, they would reach out to us in terms of asking for a price. That's to be established, basically.
Okay. Essentially market price.
Right. There's also within the mid-C pricing, currently it's what's called a Schedule C. So it includes attributes. Yeah. We anticipate that there will be a new product that will include wrap quality energy. That has yet to be priced. That will be a higher value than the current market because it has the wrap attributes. So we don't know exactly what it will be. We do know it will be mid-C plus an adder on top of that. We have seen in some of our contracts, we have been able to add what's called an adder. And one of those three components is capacity. And the reason they come to us is because wrap is one of those reasons, because they're all in the same room and know they need this for wrap.
Yeah. If I'm understanding, correct me please if I'm not understanding this correctly. In the past, we have had very little economic opportunity to collect on our reserve capacity. This would be an opportunity to do so.
Correct.
Okay.
Sean, Dennis, anything else?
No, that's it. Thank you. Okay.
So I have kind of a statement with a question. It's kind of twofold. One is, you know, we're in an area of dynamic resource options and challenges. So solar and wind and all the things that are benefits and challenges to a system. So managing and planning for that power and the costs seem to be just growing and growing the challenges. I just can't imagine how challenging all of that is, managing that. But I like the idea of participating in a volunteer market such as this. But my question has to do with, so that's as the regular business is going on and as we're flush and somebody's lean and we're negotiating market price purchases, that's all one side of the business. But when you have something like what happened in Texas, an emergency or weather related or earthquake or something like that, what's the advantage of participating in this voluntary resource adequacy program in those cases?
So Texas specifically is basically disconnected from the rest of the country. Mm-hmm. And what you saw there was a tragedy. Over 200 people died because they didn't have power. What WRAP actually does is pool people's resources across the whole region and allows for reliability to go up significantly at a cost savings for people, for utilities. What it does is potentially eliminate issues like that ever coming up. It is critical for the future of the grid for programs like this to be successful. And you saw it. I mean, Texas literally had 200 people dying because they didn't want to be connected to the rest of the region.
And I know nobody really wants to talk about that, but as a commissioner, I feel it's really important to ask that tough question. So what happens if we had an earthquake here and our system went down?
you know, and we're a power horse in this system. I want to be able to know that we've done our best in a large group of people participating voluntarily to be able to do the very best that we can in some kind of a crisis. So that's why I asked the question. So with that, I will open this up.
One more question.
Yes, Dennis.
Yeah, one more. Do you see any barriers to transmission in this structure? Or is that kind of, is there kind of a, anyway, just leave the question where it is.
There are specific rules around transmission. I'm not the detailed expert, but as you, in the 7-month look ahead, and my staff will come up and tell me if I'm wrong, basically you have to show that you have the transmission to back up that generation. We are well blessed, again, not only do we have generation, but we're at a mid-sea hub, which is going to be one of the hubs that is involved in this. So we have the asset of excess generation, plus we're right at the mid-sea. So we've got the double bonus.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And Sean, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't this the next step in determining whether there's issues like that?
Correct.
By who's committing?
I think right.
That also gets to Commissioner Bolz's an answer to his question, too. Yeah.
So, Ann, go ahead.
Thanks. I received an email from an old friend, one of our ratepayers, and she had read the whole article in the newspaper, which made me really happy that people are paying attention. But she had read in there, and I don't remember exactly how it was phrased, but the fact that this would come in handy, that we would be able to use this in emergency situations, which I think is what you just described.
Yes, absolutely.
Very well. So, I will make a note. I was going to forward that to, I'll forward it to you and have you respond to her. I doubt if she's listening to the meeting today.
Sure.
So thank you.
Yep. Sure.
One last thing. The other thing is Sean and another
Janet
people,
and Mike.
Yeah, have been working on this for 3 years.
Yes.
Right? This started back when Steve Wright was the general manager. It's fairly new to us. We've heard mention of it, but so that's why we commissioners are scrambling to get on top of this and figure out what's going on. But I think we did it. I mean, I certainly know enough to feel like I can responsibly vote. So thanks.
Thank you.
Before I ask for a motion, if there is a motion, do I have any other questions from the public? Carmen, would you come up?
Good. Been a long time, guys.
Carton, just state your name and your address.
Carton Berggren, Chelan Falls. Great questions from the commission. I have to commend you on what you have asked for and the concerns that you have. I don't have any concerns with the goals and objectives of resource adequacy, and I think over the 3 years the staff have done a wonderful job in outlining the structure of how this is going to proceed. I have concerns not with the program itself, but with moving forward in our agenda with baseload energy going offline, and it's going to continue to go offline from the generation of coal, which supports this whole western region. And the wisdom of getting involved into a system that has so much uncertainty around it, it makes me wonder, you know, as we go offline with more and more coal, how much hydro is going to be dependent upon moving forward and the control over that resource, and where that control is going to come from. It has words in the resources obligation. We have an obligation to serve. Well, what does that mean, and who controls that? Those are the concerns that I have moving forward. in the structure of who's going to control this, and the requirements of hydro is going to be increased over time. We're talking, I think it was like 112 coal plants going offline. And just alone in the resource summary that I've read, they state that there's 400 miles of transmission line that needs to be built in order to acquire 7 gigawatts of power. And you have to overbuild this system as our base load is removed. And that's concerning to me because that's not reliable power. And so hydro is going to continually be looked upon as a baseload generation. And it concerns me also that you folks are just getting the knowledge over the weekend and coming to a conclusion that this is the way we go. I think maybe this is rushed a little bit in your minds because you're not really confident because of the time that you spent researching this or being, updated. It's concerning. And I've been told that this is a system that's only going to be used as an emergency system, only in those emergency situations. It's great. So, again, I don't have no problem with it. But as we move forward with baseload going off, we're going to be in an emergency situation in not too near of a future. And are we going to always be in this emergency without baseload energy that's reliable? So I question the wisdom, and it's your decision, of course. I appreciate the off-ramp. 2 years is a good thing to be able to look at this thing, but it also I think there's a lot of questions that need to be answered as far as how this is going to be administrative, because we really don't know. This is just a projection of how we want it to work. We don't know it's going to work this way. This is a work in progress. And so, anyway, those are my comments.
May I respond to Carnan?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I may have overstated it, Carnan. We didn't just come to this weekend. I know it's been before us a number of times, but I'm speaking for myself, didn't really dive in and really, really educate myself on it until more recently. But it wasn't just a cram course all this week, and I don't know if that gives you any comfort or not.
No, it's what you want to put into it. I just know that I've been talking about this for the last 5 months.
Yeah.
As I run a campaign and as I've talked to the people across the county and I bring this issue up, I haven't found one person that's in favor of doing it. That thinks it's a good thing to do. You know, and it comes not from the fact that it's a good program. It's the control factor. We're relinquishing some control over this thing. And who has the authority to expand that?
So I have the issue for me. Yeah, I have a response to that. And I don't know if this was mentioned, but I think we all are aware of the fact that eventually at some point, if we don't do some sort of a regional, what do you want to call it? What do I want to call it?
Organized market.
Organized market. We'll be forced into an organized market. Like, for example, ISO.
That's one of those uncertainties, Ann.
That's a big uncertainty. And I would rather, the thing that I've learned and that's given me comfort, Carnan, and I've learned this since I talked to you last, this RAP is something that we've been involved in from the beginning, and we have helped shape it and make it work for us. And we will have a seat at the table, and we'll be part of the, I don't know if we'll be part of the governance, but at least we'll definitely have a seat at the table. And that gives me comfort versus not joining something and being forced down the road.
But your seat at the table, is that a place that, you know, how much authority do you really have at that seat? Who has the real authority of moving forward? It could still be the state. I mean, they control. And so I'm throwing these out as concerns, and they're unanswered.
I would suggest it because this was really helpful for me. Spend some time with Sean. Because he is the expert, And he's been, you know, involved in this, completely involved in it for years. So,
I'm not questioning that. I'm questioning things that are beyond his control. When you talk about, you know, 4,800 megawatts that are going offline and it's going to be replaced with wind and solar.
Yeah.
This is the program and this is the reason. And even in the summary itself, it says it's impractical. The summary itself that they produce and you probably read that too, Sean, and to be able to build out what they want to do. It's not built yet, guys. And so they're even saying you have to overbuild the system and it's impractical. You can read the summary yourself. That brings concern to me as, you know, as someone that's going to be moving into the commission at some point. And I will talk with Sean about this and learn more about it. But I've done my research on it, and I've looked at it. Maybe not as thorough as everybody else. I admit that. But I'm looking at it at a very high level. But I'm also looking at it in the long term of where we're going to end up being in this system and who controls it. And can anybody tell me who's going to control this in 2 years, 3 years? How is that going to look?
Carney, anybody?
I mean, I don't know, and I've asked the question, and nobody can answer that. So,
I think we're all asking.
Yeah,
and I think we're all asking those questions.
Yeah,
I think this is the most critical time to utilities and our customers, I appreciate the work the staff has done to get us to this point. We have the off ramps. We don't like what's going on, and I want to be part at the table influencing and having those who have the knowledge to be participating in the policy development. And so I agree. I think it's critical, and we need to ask those questions. So
again, I don't have any problem with the program. Yeah. I mean, I think the goals and objectives are well laid out in the draft and how this is going.
So thanks for asking the questions, and we'll look forward to having you participating with us up here in the near future.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, and by the way, I just want to thank the commission and the staff. You know, since I was elected in 2008, we had many issues, budgetary issues that we had to overcome, and many, many hurdles. And boy, you've done a wonderful, wonderful job. My thanks to the staff. You know, I was there at the beginning of it. I've watched this thing evolve. We're in a very, very good position financially, thanks to the people that have stayed the course and done the job with debt reduction, you know, our sales and all those things that are part of the program. You've done as an observer over the last 6 years, you've done a wonderful job. And thank you for the commission for, you know, staying the course. You've done really good.
Thanks for those comments.
Thanks.
And
thanks,
good luck, Mark. Dennis.
Okay, that's it. Okay, any other questions from the audience or online? Yes.
Yeah, Paul Schmidt, live in Wenatchee. The only question I had is, and Carnan touched on it, is, and before he got up here, I wrote it, how is it regulated, the governance? Is it a board? Is it, and do people have a seat at the table based on how large they are, and what does that look like?
Yes, we the tariff was filed with FERC, so it's going through approval right now. We are a part of multiple committees. We have a vote based on our generation, and there's a formula. And so we have been participating literally for 3 years and have voted on pretty much everything along the way. So we've been there. I would say we have more influence for our size than most people, especially when it comes to hydro.
You might share, Sean, how it's governed after in the binding phase, the wrap.
The wrap, yeah.
Yep.
So after the binding phase, when you're speaking, once it's up and running.
Yep.
Yeah. So there'll be action committees that it's a very. I can go through after, I would say, because there's a whole chart on this, and I'm welcome to sit down with you. It's kind of complicated in terms of the voting structure. So, but we do have a seat at the table if we to join.
And so, what are the? I
The first year is $185,000, and then it's $150,000 after that.
All right. Any other questions?
I have a comment. I just want to thank Paul for always getting engaged. He's come to a lot of meetings over the years. I'm going to be gone at the end of this month, but I want to thank you for being a really responsible, good citizen and paying attention to what your PUD does and bringing forth always good questions. Thank you. So keep it up.
You missed my thing, wishing you well. You and Dennis.
Oh.
It was very nice.
Thank you.
But if you play it back.
I'll play it back. I want to hear it.
All right. Commissioners, lively discussion, lots of information. Is there a motion to move forward with staff's recommendation?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept Resolution 16 as presented.
Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
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 Motion opposed? Hearing none, motion is passed.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you, everyone. All right. Kirk, we are on to manager items at this time.
Yeah, we've got at least five manager items. Start with Ron. You want to start first? Ron's got three of them, actually. You want to move the iPad over so Commissioner Bolson, or there you go, even better.
You didn't give me much time to get used to that.
I saw you walk in the door and thought, okay, we'll start with Ron.
First off, I just want to provide a regional water update. Commissioner Arsenal and I attended the annual regional water meeting with the other committee members on October 18th this year. A number of items were discussed. One, the 2023 budget. Nothing really surprising here for regional. The operations budget is up, proposed to be up 3% from last year for a total of $1.124 million. There's also a one-time expense for replacing pump number two motor. This is something that's been envisioned for a while. It's pump number two, I believe, is the one that's used the most there. Large motor, it's $309,000. Other than that, for regional, it's pretty, budget-wise, pretty much business as normal. The members did also propose to increase that regional wholesale rate another 10%. This is either the fourth or the fifth year in a row that we've done that in anticipation of needing to fund in part the second source project. Next item, this will be the third year that we seek to lease those excess water rights to Crown Columbia through that water rights mitigation agreement. And the way that's all set up with ecology, it requires a regional process this addendum each year. And the revenue that we get from that is just over $200,000. I don't have that resolution here today. I just wanted to let you know that we'll be bringing that to the next board meeting. Regional second source study, we're making good progress with that. Hired a consultant earlier this year, and they've actually made pretty quick work of it. Had several meetings with the regional members for check-in. There was a meeting that was scheduled for a site tour down in the Tri-Cities for a couple of similar treatment plants down there that are also treating Columbia River water. Next check-in is scheduled for third week in January, where the consultant's going to present. We're going to review the preliminary engineering report for the first time. Those are the regional items. Before I move on, are there any questions or comments? Okay. Next is Peshawson Water District. I just want to update on, we've previously called it the purchase and sale agreement, but it occurred to us that we aren't purchasing and they aren't selling. It's a transfer of assets. So it's an update on the transfer agreement. We're making good progress on it. We'd like to come back with a resolution at the next board meeting, authorizing the GM essentially to negotiate the final terms and enter into that agreement with the Shasta Water District. And there's the major provisions that are included there is, of course, we aren't going to pay anything. We're going to acquire all the assets, their system, of course, and their property, any cash that they have. We also get their liabilities and responsibility to serve. The agreement contains a transition period, so the purchase and sale agreement itself does not transfer. You know, we don't begin operating the system upon execution of that agreement. It essentially establishes a roadmap for what will occur over the next several months. We've currently identified 6 months to transition to full district operation, but we won't actually own the system until that transition period is over and it closes. And closing is the formal transition of those assets to Chelan PUD and dissolution of the Peshastin Water District. Oh, and of course, we will have a full authority, just like the rest of our system, and discretion to set water rates for the customers of that system, you know, following closing. Anything else? Okay. Any questions on the Shasta Water District?
How long have we been doing that, or how long have you been doing that, should I say?
Well, we received the first request from them in September of 2016. And then there was some work over the next couple of years. You might recall there was a public power benefit request to fund a feasibility of just looking at regionalization of the Upper Valley utilities. And that concluded in 2018, I believe. We've only been actively working on this for just the last year and a half or two. Okay, thank you much, everyone.
Before you go, Ron, I just want to say something that, having been the board representative to Regional Water now for several years, I've had the opportunity to work with Ron and witness Ron as he represents the district at Regional Water. And I got to tell you do an excellent job, Ron. I'm really impressed by the work that you do there and the relationships that you've built with Regional Water and your ability to really work well at representing the district. So just wanted to say good job.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And I've enjoyed having you there as well.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, Ron. I'd like to invite Kelly Boyd up. Kelly's got one item for us.
Good morning. Kelly Boyd, Chief Financial and Risk Officer. And I have more of a housekeeping item. As background for that, as part of the 2020 to 2024 strategic planning process, there was a focus on water, wastewater, and fiber becoming more self-sustaining over time. And as part of the work to establish a roadmap also for that to happen, financial targets were developed based on certain guidance. And part of that guidance was the assumption that those smaller systems, their share of the cost of the shared assets that we have, like buildings, computer systems, those types of things get allocated to all the systems. And that as part of this path to self-sustainability, they would get a 0% allocation of those shared assets for 2020 to 2022. And then kind of 50% of their proportionate share thereafter. The service center is an example of one of those shared assets or shared building where a lot of the different functions reside in that whole campus. With the extension of the service center project into 2023, it goes beyond the contemplated 2022 completion date where 0% allocation was part of the assumptions. With the 2023 budget, there's about $50 million still remaining on that project to be completed in 2023 when we were originally assuming that would be done in 2022 and part of this 0% allocation. So the purpose of this manager's item is to confirm, confirm with the board that it's appropriate to extend the original guidance to reflect that the allocated share of the cost of the service center will be 0% for those small systems, water, wastewater, and fiber, through the completion of that project. For today, we're only looking for a head nod because it helps us with our forecasting so that we can forecast consistent with board guidance. And we'll be back early next year with a formal resolution to be consistent with how the original guidance was put in place through resolution. But for today, we are looking for that head nod confirmation that that's the appropriate guidance and consistent with strategic planning. Are there any questions for me about how I describe that? I know sometimes the allocations can also be one of those complicated items.
You did well.
I think you got your head nod.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly.
Thanks, Kelly. I'd like to invite Anna Aguirre up. Anna's going to share some exciting news for customers. And Anna's new in her role as the customer service manager, and but not new to the district. She's been here eight years.
Yeah.
8 years. So welcome, Anna.
Thank you. Yeah, so we're just here sharing that we've got three payment kiosks installed, one in Chelan, one in Leavenworth, and one here in Wenatchee. The ones in Chelan and in Leavenworth are outside of the building, as you can see in the pictures here. And the one here in Wenatchee is right inside of our front doors, so customers can get away from the cold at least a little bit. But we've had some good success this week. We've had some customers really excited that they can make cash payments on there. That's one of the reasons why they walk into our office most of the time, is because they don't like to make payments with credit cards or checks or go online and do any of that. And the kiosks have been really helpful to them to be able to make those payments.
Great.
Yeah, it's been something that's been, again, another thing that's been in the works for a while. And, you know, we're always looking for ways to provide options for customers, and so we are excited about this and hope these get used a fair amount. So,
you're going to think I'm a broken record. It's kind of a long time coming. It's going to be great. We really need that in Chelan.
Yeah.
So here comes the broken record part. So do we have? And you may have answered it. Do we? But I didn't see it. Are there some phone numbers on the outside of the building for contractors? For customers who have questions, let's say they want to, you know, they're building a new house and they want to hook up, are there phone numbers to direct them who to talk to?
I mean, do you know Anna or is John? John, do you want to speak to that?
I know contractors, they don't want to attend a seminar on it, and they're not going to get out of their truck and go knock on the door.
We do, Commissioner Congdon. We did, you know, based on our conversation several months ago, there's a there's a full listing of who to contact for Conway. Oh, so, yes.
Great. Sorry, I didn't see it. But I haven't been getting around much.
We'll double check to make sure it didn't get removed during cleaning. But yeah,
I can look.
Definitely wanted to make sure that was up there.
Thanks, John.
Yep, I can confirm last week when I was up with the installers, there is a list of phone numbers. I just wasn't sure exactly what all was there. So thank you, John, for confirming that it's all those numbers that are needed.
So. Anna, thanks for sharing that and staff for spearheading this. For our customers, that for various reasons, whether their income level, whatever reason, I want to get into those, but this is big. That gives people, you know, when we closed the doors and made it and restricted those hours, this is what we heard as a concern from our customers. So this is another example of we listened, we adjusted, and they now can make that payment in cash, and that's a big deal. So I want to tell you, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Anna. Thanks, Lindsay.
Yes, I just wanted to mention, I'm not sure if Kirk said, he kind of stole my thunder in introducing Anna. But Anna is our new customer relations supervisor. So she took Carrie Wendell's position when Carrie left this spring. So
welcome. Very good.
Anna. Those, awesome. As mentioned, she's been at the district for quite a while.
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, Lindsay. That's all I have for manager items.
All right. Commissioners, do you have anything that you would like to, under commission items? Gary.
I would just like to report that this last week, the Washington Public Power Association had their annual conference. It was in Spokane. I was able to attend. In spite of the weather, there were well over 100 folks that were able to attend, and it went extremely well. And this association, for those that may not be aware, brings all of the PUDs in the state of Washington together and give them a platform and a forum with which to address issues that impact the public utility industry across the state. And so Chelan PUD was well represented, and the conference went extremely well.
Great. I'm sorry I couldn't attend, but interestingly enough, the weather was a blessing to keep me at home, because then the pipe between our well and our house broke.
Oh, no.
And I would have really been in trouble with my spouse if I was gone to Spokane and our well was out. So I'm glad it was a good conference.
Good.
Anything else from commissioners? Commission travel, Lisa? Anything that we need to talk about or know?
We are into our 2023 schedule now. We have January Waputa, the 11th through 13th, February Waputa through 27, and then we have the legislative rally in February that I think most everyone plans to attend.
So the January meeting, you have me downtown place, so you do have me registered.
I believe so, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else, commissioners, for Lisa? Thank you, Lisa. All right, delegation of action items from previous board meetings.
We had one from November 15th, and that was Sean was going to provide additional information on what we think RAP will do in the way of impacting wholesale prices and markets, and he sent that around late last week.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And we had no new ones for today, unless we missed something.
Okay. At this time, I will open it up for additional public comment, either online or present.
Not a public comment, but if we have a few minutes, I'd love to be able to watch what Jacob had as part of his HPI. I mean, he had a video that if we had time.
Good.
It's a few minutes. Is that 2.5 minutes long?
Great. Let's do that. While you're setting that up, Jacob, I'm also going to ask, do we have any other matters of general business as may necessarily come before the commission? So we will close after Jacob's finished with his presentation.
So just to set this up again, Jacob Morgan, a business manager for Generation Transmission. This is the HPI moment, so I'll probably have to pop it out real quick. So this is, Wired put this out in 2016. This is the 9-day plane comes in factory, out factory, and can fly in 9 days.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
I'm gonna have to go. Yeah. Of enabled content.
we have to do it from the tray down below. We have to...
Bummer. I can find it.
There you go.
This one's a little bit different.
This is the most productive airplane factory in the world. Boeing's Renton plant outside Seattle builds the 737 in all its configurations for customers globally.
To build 42 planes a month, you need a pretty sophisticated, pretty huge production line. It takes 9 days for a plane to do this loop and be assembled. Let's break that down.
Boeing's built more than 9,000 737s since launching the single-aisle jet in the mid-1960s. And each one started life something like this, a hollow fuselage built in Wichita, Kansas, and hauled by train to Renton. Once that shell enters the factory, days 1 through 3 are really all about the internals. It's like building a house. First, engineers install the plumbing and electrics and the insulation. On the 4th day, the tube becomes a plane. The wings go on, along with the vertical fin or tail. Workers align them with laser guidance. This is when they fit the landing gear, too. Day 5 is for the horizontal stabilizer install and the start of functional tests. Engineers are putting wiring in now for flight control and finishing the internal floorboards. They start building the interiors up, the galleys and the bathrooms. Then, on day 6, the plane comes alive. That flashing red light means there's power to the airplane. Large-scale tests are now possible, like, does the landing gear retract properly? It had better, the next time it's folded away will be when this plane takes off for the first time. Day 7, and the plane's weight is set on its own wheels, and the engines are fixed to the wings, along with their own network of wires, cables, and tubes. All through the build, systems are checked and rechecked, and day 8 is a critical test of the flight control surfaces, the flaps, and the flight deck itself, the cockpit. All these parts have been checked in isolation. Now, it's crucial they work together. The plane is nearing the end of the moving production line. On day 9, the customer gets to do a walkthrough inspection before it's towed out of the factory. Born, in a way, into the big wide world. The next stop is Renton Field for ground tests of the engines and other systems. And then, first flight.
So, just one other point, if I can, around innovation that's really cool is, again, I've seen the parallel of what we're doing with HPI. To get the seats up into the plane, one of the issues is they would bring a lift, they'd put all the seats on a lift, and they lift it up, and again, just became a tedious process, and there was an employee that happened to have a hay field and filled their barn with hay. It's like, hey, I've got a 45-degree angled ramp that I fill my barn with. I think we should try that out. And so they were able to basically bring a device in like that, like throw hay upstairs in your barn, start to send the seats up in the plane using the same type of mechanism. So it's just cool to have that, you know, that piece of culture that we're all really striving for, is just to be able to look at something, think about it a little bit differently, just get that incremental improvement. So anyways, thanks.
Thanks, Jacob.
Thanks for sharing, Jake.
Fascinating. Thank you.
Okay. The last thing I have is to make note that we will be moving into executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board or is likely to become a party, and or legal risk as authorized by statute, evaluate the qualifications of an applicant for public employment, or to review the performance of a public employee as authorized by statute, and to consider the minimum price at which real estate will be offered for sale or lease when public knowledge regarding such consideration would cause the likelihood of decreased price as authorized by statute, and to consider matters affecting national security pursuant to statute as well. We will be in executive for 60 minutes. No decisions or votes will be taken.
Are we going to start that at 1?
We will begin that at 1 o'clock.
Thank you.
We'll recess until 1 o'clock. Thank you.
Thanks, Jacob.
Thanks.
Good to see you, Ann. I didn't know if you were going to make it.
Make sure we're in the right spot here.
Am I not in the right spot?
You seem to be.
I just wanted to make sure.
You're at 2 hours plus up
or
there.
Something, yeah.
You look good.
We are coming out of executive session. No votes were taken. No decisions were made. Is there any additional business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we stand adjourned.